life's path.
Nicole Joseph, you were particular with people with disabilities. I correct Maryland in that 2014-2015 school year I mentioned, more than 18,000 students with disabilities were suspended or expelled.
Yeah, in that year, 12% of the population of students in Maryland schools had disabilities.
What kind of disabilities are we talking about?
There's a wide variety of disabilities for which students are identified as having special education needs. But we're talking about learning disabilities, intellectual disabilities, autism. There's a wide variety of disabilities. But even though those students make up only 12% of the population in Maryland, they make up 26% of the suspensions and expulsions. So those problems that we see nationally are mirrored in Maryland.
And mirrored also in terms of the racial differences?
Yes, they are mirrored in terms of the racial differences. So in Maryland, about 35% of the population of students in schools are African American, for example. But African American students make up 64% of the suspensions and expulsions.
So you both seem, Derek Black, let me ask you, you are convinced that this disparity doesn't have a justification in the behaviors of children.
Yeah, that's correct. I mean, I think some people could be dismissive of desegregation and say that's a long time ago. But there was a fascinating study in the last year that attempted to compare the discipline that is imposed on African Americans and white students when they're engaging in the exact same type of misbehavior. And the way, this is a hard thing to test, but the way they went about doing this was to basically write up stories of misbehavior and put student records together and present them to principals and administrators and say, what would you do with this student? What's your decision? And interestingly, at the very first act of misbehavior, what we found was that there really wasn't that much of a disparity between the decisions to suspend and expel African Americans and whites. But the second time a student misbehaved, the disparities jumped off the chart. And what the researchers theorized was that there's this underlying perception and stereotype that African Americans and African American boys in particular are unruly, can't behave, are sort of troublemakers. And, you know, the principal may push that stereotype aside for the first time, but when the student misbehaves the second time, the sort of instinct is, I'm confirming the stereotype. And so those disparities really come into play with sort of, you know, the second and third instances of misbehavior. And again, this is for the exact same misbehavior as described on a piece of paper.
Nicole Joseph, do you see that same kind of pattern in looking at students with disabilities?
Yes, students with disabilities are disproportionately suspended, and it's for behaviors which are primarily things like disrespect, insubordination, disruption. So we're not talking about serious offenses. We're talking about things that could be handled in other ways.
This is Midday on WIPR. I'm Sheila Cast speaking with Nicole Joseph, attorney for the Disability Rights Maryland and co-chair of the Maryland Coalition to Reform School Discipline, and with University of South Carolina School of Law Professor Derek Black, who is the author of a book published this week, Ending Zero Tolerance, The Crisis of Absolute School Discipline. You are welcome to join this conversation. Were you ever suspended from school? If so, why? Did you think the punishment fit the crime? How did being suspended affect how you behaved, and how did it affect your attitude about school? You can call us at 410-662-8780, or you can send us an email at midday@wypr.org. Derek Black, I want to pursue this idea of more than one suspension, of multiple suspensions, because you detail in the book what an impact that has on kids dropping out. Explain that.
Yeah, so each time a student misbehaves, there's a decision that's being made. Am I going to take, you know, suspension or expulsion action against them, or am I going to try to work with the child? And what the studies show us, what the data shows us, is that the decision to suspend a child makes that child more likely to be suspended again later. And the reason for that is twofold. One is when a school makes that decision, and in fact it has formally labeled that child a problem, And so when that child misbehaves, again, it's much easier to punish a problem child than it is a child that we're still working on, that we're still reforming, so to speak. But also from the child's perspective, it actually makes him or her more likely to misbehave. And the reason why is there's what I might call a psychic break that occurs when a child is suspended. You know, children generally see the school as being a supporting, loving place that's trying to help them make progress. They may not like school, but they understand that the teachers are there to help them, the administration is there to help them. But when they make the decision to exclude that child from school, that sort of vision of school is shattered. And that child is less connected to the school. It's less connected to the parents and therefore has less connected to the teachers, I should say, and therefore has less incentive to follow the rules. And so the school's vision of the student changes and the student's vision of the school changes. You know, and one suspension breeds a second suspension. It breeds expulsion. It makes dropout rates, skyrocket, and then of course, unfortunately, you know, juvenile justice interaction, unemployment, all of those sort of bad things cascade.
I can picture that being the sequence with older students, say high school students. Do you see an impact when young students, you know, early grades, middle school, when they're suspended? Does it create that kind of psychic break you're describing?
You know, I have to be honest, I haven't looked at studies that disaggregate it in that way, but I do think that the school's perception of the child at least begins to shift very early on, and I think that, you know, unfortunately, the evidence of that has shown up even at the preschool level, and it really goes back to this sort of stereotype of who is the sort of inherently problematic child versus the child that we can get to behave better. You know, African-American children in particular have some of the highest disparities in comparison to whites in the pre-K level. And it's really quite shocking that we would expel and suspend a kid who has not even reached kindergarten yet, to be quite honest. But yet with African-American children, we see that happening more often than we previously did.
I think that those reasons are why some other districts have started to ban suspensions of pre-kindergarten, kindergarten, and first and second grade students. So California, Connecticut, Georgia, New Jersey, Oregon have all in varying ways banned some of the suspensions of the very young students. And I think that in Maryland, we have that opportunity now as well, because in 2014, 2015, we suspended 558 pre-K and kindergartners. And when you add just...
This is throughout Maryland.
Throughout Maryland.
In the public schools.
Correct.
Nearly 560 pre-K.
Pre-K.
And kindergarten.
That's right. We suspended 558 of them. And when you add just first and second grade to that number, you get 2,910 suspensions. So pre-K to second grade, we suspended quite a lot of students. And I think that there's an opportunity for Maryland to follow some of these other states that have started to address some of those suspensions of very young students.
Okay, we need to take a quick break. I want to pick up on exactly that when we come back, more about school suspensions. You can join the conversation. Are you a teacher? Do you think suspensions are doled out too often? Or do you think they are necessary to remove disruptive students? You can join our conversation with an email to midday@wypr.org, or you can phone us at 410-662-8780. I'm Sheila Cast. Stay with us. Welcome back to Midday, everyone. I'm Sheila Cast. Nationally, African-American students and students with disabilities are 2 to 4 times more likely to be suspended or expelled compared to white students and students without disabilities. Why are suspension rates so disproportionate? What are the long-term consequences for students who face a suspension? I'm speaking with University of South Carolina School of Law Professor Derek Black and Nicole Joseph, attorney for Disability Rights Maryland and co-chair of the Maryland Coalition to Reform School Discipline. You are welcome to join this conversation. Do you think suspensions work to stop misbehavior? Give us a call at 410-662-8780 or send an email to midday@wypr.org. Derek Black, what do we know about whether suspending a kid at a young age discourages them from misbehaving as they get older? Because presumably that's one of the theories behind a suspension, is to teach a kid a lesson.
Yeah, there's no evidence that I'm aware of that supports the idea that suspending children produces better outcomes. And in fact, I think the reason why we have these new statutes, as Nicole mentioned, banning suspension, expulsion in the early grades, is that they finally recognized that the data said there's just no there's no efficacy to this. There's no sort of positive outcome. So they stopped it there. But I think the other thing we have to realize is that anytime we suspend one student, the misbehaving student, it's not an anonymous child. That's somebody's cousin. That's somebody's brother or sister. That's somebody's friend, right? That's somebody's classmate, potentially for 6, 7, 8 years. And when one child sees a school system treat another child in a way that they think is unfair, that's unjust, that is harmful, it doesn't just affect the student who has been suspended. It affects the peers. And so the data also shows us that not only is the suspended student harmed, the other students are. The achievement of what we call sort of innocent bystanders is actually depressed in schools that have unusually high levels of suspension and expulsion.
Tell me a bit more about that. You say the data show. That seems like a hard thing to measure. What can you point to that gives you a clear picture of how the other kids in the class, the ones you just call the innocent bystanders, how do we know that they're affected?
Well, what we're doing is we're looking at schools with similar demographic populations, so similar levels of poverty, similar levels of racial diversity, similar levels of sort of background factors. And then the one thing that seems to differentiate, or that we look at to differentiate them, is what is the suspension levels. And so what we see is as those suspension levels go up, there's actually lower achievement on standardized exams of the students who actually aren't suspended or expelled.
Well, you've read the studies and I haven't. It's just that you and Nicole have both given us the idea that suspensions are so widespread, I'd be surprised you could actually find classrooms where other kids had not been exposed to seeing somebody suspended. Nicole, do you want to jump in?
Sure. I think that the thing that we do know, I mean, we don't know necessarily, we know that there are no studies that show that suspension works, right? That's what Mr. Black said just a minute ago. But what we do know, I think, is also very telling. We know that suspensions lead to substance abuse, to school failure, to dropout, and later to involvement in the juvenile justice system. So those things are more easy to measure. And I think those are important considerations as well.
Of course,
there. Can I jump in?
Yes.
Could I jump in there? I mean, Richard Arum wrote a book about 8 or 9 years ago that had sort of massive surveys of students. And what he found was, and this was students responding, is that, you know, getting the right amount of authority and balance and rules is a tricky thing. But that once students begin to perceive that discipline is too tough. Now, again, what is too tough is in the eyes of the beholder. But once they begin to have that perception, that they actually begin to be a little bit distrustful of authority, some become, they say on their reports, you know, I'm more likely to break a rule now, right? Because it's sort of this contest between what students believe is legitimate and what the authorities believe is legitimate. And it is hard to find that balance. But when the school goes too far, at least the students are telling us that they react negatively to that.
I'd like to talk to Steve, who has called us from Baltimore, who may have something to contribute on this question of that finding that balance. Steve, welcome to Midday.
Oh, thank you. As far as I get on, but glad to be here.
And your comment?
Yeah, I've been listening to conversation, and real quick, my daughter was a second-year student at one of the schools in Baltimore County, but it was a somewhat troubled school, and discipline was a real issue for her. I mean, just she couldn't control these classrooms.
I'm sorry, you said she was a second-year student?
Second-year teacher, I'm sorry.
Teacher.
Yeah. So she had a real issue with controlling these students, and she couldn't teach. So after 2 years, she was done. She just said, I can't do it anymore. And she'd come home in tears at night. And the issue that was the student discipline. And the thing that kind of, I started to look into all this, and I saw, well, after 3 years in these troubled schools, 50% of the teachers give up. They just leave. And I said, oh, my God, that's like appalling. So to me, student discipline is a real big issue. And I agree with the conversation where it was going to say suspensions aren't the answer. I think you made your point there. And I would agree with that. But I can't say I would hold that out as part of my answer, because some of these students just should not be in these schools. They really shouldn't be. But, you know, I guess my question is, in lieu of suspensions, what do you do? And, you know, my daughter would try over and over again. And what she would always tell me, she goes, Dad, when I call home, if I got a hold of a parent, which typically she couldn't, she could tell right away why these kids are what they are. And I'm not making any things about wealth, but it seems like in these troubled areas, parenting is a big part of the issue.
Steve, you've given us a lot to think about here. I really appreciate your calling. Derek Black, how would you respond to Steve?
Yeah, I mean, that's a great question, and one that I always try to focus on and start with. You know, we can't just start by blaming teachers. A lot of folks want to put this on teachers. There's certainly, you know, bad apples out there, but teachers and the schools themselves are in a precarious situation. The answer isn't to simply say you can't suspend or expel students anymore. If that's all we're going to do, we're not fixing anything. But I think what we have to begin to do is get at what is the root of the misbehavior and how can we make it better. And the answer is, you know, the root of misbehavior comes from at least, you know, three or four different places. One of them are challenges that children are facing outside the school. Hunger, homelessness, child abuse, right? Those are a common thing that a lot of children unfortunately face. Another one is trouble learning itself, right? One of the ways that a child reacts to the struggling academically in school is to misbehave, to redirect their energy somewhere else. And suspending that child doesn't address homelessness. It doesn't address learning difficulties. So we have to begin to invest resources to find out what is it that's causing the misbehavior and try to help children there. And that's part of the problem, right? I mean, I think as the caller suggests, right, his daughter was struggling in these classrooms, and the reason why is there was no support there for those students. There was a report that came out in the past year that talked about a number of major metropolitan school districts that had more school resource officers than they did guidance counselors. You know, social workers and guidance counselors are one of the sort of key ways to figuring out what is going on in these children's lives and how can we take a proactive approach to it as opposed to a punitive approach. And I'm, you know, there's some more specific strategies that I'm happy to talk about later, but I don't want to run off on too much of a tangent.
Right. I do want to get to those later, but I also want to find out what Nicole Joseph would say to Steve.
I think with regard to students with disabilities, which is where Mr. Black, I think, was starting to go, is that those students in some cases are misunderstood and are not receiving the services that they need. So for those students, there are processes already in place that are underutilized that could be used. The special education process does have ways that we can begin to address some of the areas that are lacking, so services or behavioral interventions. And then even outside of students with disabilities, there are a number of at least pilot programs in Maryland that are starting to be proven to be effective. So, you know, for example, in Maryland, we have the Community Conferencing Center, which is one alternative to suspension.
Community conferencing.
Community conferencing is a type, it is a restorative approach, which asks people to restore relationships after an incident. There are other organizations, Holistic Life Foundation. One school in Baltimore City just received a large federal grant to address violence in that school through additional mental health supports. There are a number of other organizations which are implementing the alternatives to suspension that I think the caller was concerned about.
Steve specifically said, what do you do instead?
Right.
And I want to talk more about those. Let me just remind people, that's Nicole Joseph. She's an attorney for Disability Rights Maryland. She's co-chair of the Maryland Coalition to Reform School Discipline here on Midday, WYPR. I'm Sheila Cast, and with us on the line is University of South Carolina School of Law Professor Derek Black. His new book out this week is Ending Zero Tolerance, The Crisis of Absolute School Discipline. Nicole Joseph, in, 2014, the Maryland State Department of Education made some changes, stopped using out-of-school suspension as a punishment for truancy, required schools to break down their suspensions, break down data by race, gender, disability status. Has this actually started to change things in the classroom?
Well, I think that's a good question. I mean, in terms of disproportionality, those regulations required that districts start to measure that disproportionality. And right now, the State Department of Education is in the process of determining how they will measure that disproportionality. So I think that there is an opportunity for them, which hasn't yet been realized, to address the disproportionality more fully. Those regulations, which passed in 2014, actually did a lot of good things to end zero tolerance policies in Maryland. Including renaming the suspension. So renaming long-term suspension, extended suspension, so that it becomes more clear that when you remove a student from school, for example, for 5 days, that is a long time in the life of that student. So there are some parts of those regulations have been implemented and have made a difference. And some parts have not yet been implemented and still need some work.
So it sounds to me as if you're saying that as an advocate, you would not necessarily want some of those regulations implemented as they've been drafted?
No, I think the regulations are a positive thing. They say that their intent is to end zero tolerance, and they do that by putting limits on the use of suspension in situations, for example, where there's no imminent threat to anybody, and they say that that we should not suspend a student outside of school for more than 10 days unless there is a finding that returning that student to the classroom would be an imminent threat to another person. So I think that they are positive. They are all positive, but some parts of them haven't been implemented yet. And that is the measurement of disproportionality, because the State Department of Education is still considering how to measure disproportionality. So they need to come out with exactly how they're going to do that.
Professor Black, I think some people may have heard what Steve had to say about what his daughter, the teacher, experienced. And thinking about what you said, that a tough suspension practice makes other kids in the classroom less attached to school or doesn't serve them, and yet they hear Steve describe chaos in the schoolroom, and they think, well, it's got to be better for the other students to get a really disruptive kid out of there.
Well, I guess I would say that one of the things that I try to emphasize in the book is that we cannot separate school discipline from school quality, that in fact, good school discipline is a function of good school quality, and bad school discipline is a function of bad school quality. And the honest answer is that across this country, to the tune of anywhere from $1,500 to $2,500 per pupil, we are underfunding the education of poor and minority students. So, you know, money doesn't perfectly equate with educational quality, but we are putting students in classrooms with the sort of least experience and least qualified teachers. I say students who need help the most with the least resources and the fewest teachers. And so, I can't blame the students. I can't blame the teachers. I blame the system for not committing to provide a quality education. And so there's no, to be honest, there's no fixing the situation that Steve described without the commitment of resources to those schools. And, at this moment in time, many of our state leaders are unwilling to do that. We have, particularly during the recession, there are a number of states still today that now that tax revenues have rebounded and are above where they were before the recession are still spending less money per pupil than they did before the recession. So, that is a recipe for disaster.
Tony has called us from Baltimore. Tony, welcome to Midday.
Hello?
Hello, Tony. You're on the air.
Hi. I just want to share some of my experience because it's a myriad of dysfunction wrong responses and ultimately success. So I was raised in the Bronx, and I moved to Brooklyn when I was 13 in New York. When I was in the first grade, actually, I was my first suspension because I was bored. And I can remember it vividly. I was very active, and, you know, I was diagnosed as hyperactive ADHD and never given any medication ever in my life. And this was back in the 60s. So when they diagnosed you as that, they kind of ostracized you. And because I was poor, and I guess because of my race, I don't know if it was true because of my race, but it seemed that disproportionately, again, people of color seemed to be taken advantage of in those situations. But I eventually went to a 600 school in the sixth grade after several suspensions because of my inattentiveness and misbehavior, not because I was a threat to anyone. The conversations with my mother always started with, he's a very intelligent young man. He just can't focus. And we can't keep him in the classroom with the other students. When I finished work before everybody else, I was told, you have to wait for the class. Of course, with ADHD, I'm not waiting for anybody.
Right. I understand that. I'm trying to zoom in on what you particularly want to bring to the attention of our guests.
Well, I'm bringing to attention the experience of whether or not you should suspend people for that behavior, or whether or not there should be some alternative intervention. And as a result of my alternative intervention being sent to 600 schools, which is an alternative school in New York, the sixth grade and the 10th grade, I learned multiple skills. As a result of learning those multiple skills, I became a vocational instructor involved in Maryland, in Cecil County. I taught the same type of kids that I was. I worked at a mental health program in Baltimore City and developed a pre-employment training program myself for them. So as a result of being sent to an alternative to being suspended all the time, I actually grew and became a responsible citizen.
Tony, I really appreciate your sharing that story with us. Nicole, is Tony a very unusual story, or can this happen, and does it happen, in your experience?
Some students in Maryland are sent to alternative programs when they have disciplinary problems, and that can be a good thing or a bad thing depending on the quality of the program. And depending on whether that program can meet that individual child's needs. So for students with disabilities, sometimes they cannot do that. There are students who go to alternative programs and then are able to be reintegrated. And there are some that get stuck in them for far too long. So, for example, I represented a ninth grader with a learning disability who was suspended in Baltimore City. And he was suspended for something that was fairly serious, but in fact, there was no evidence that he had been involved. And he denied being involved. And when that situation went to a suspension conference, it was determined that he would go to an alternative program. Unfortunately, and that happened in October, unfortunately, the school system never made a final decision on his suspension in violation of the law. And he sat in that alternative program all the way until February. That alternative program could not meet his needs. They could not fulfill.
So it wasn't the kind of case that Tony told us about where he picked up skills and learned to manage his disability. It was not a
good
placement.
No, and, the cases that I see, generally, things are not going well, right? So in this case, the student was not receiving the services he needed. It wasn't a positive experience for him, and it took months and months to get him back into a school that could meet his needs.
It's a sobering thought. We need to take another short break here. Lots more to talk about alternatives that schools could use to address misbehavior without removing students from school and whether or not these are effective. You can join our conversation. You can call us at 410-662-8780 or send us an email at midday@wypr.org. I'm Sheila Cast. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Midday, everyone. I'm Sheila Cast. We're talking today about the use of suspensions and expulsions in schools and alternative ways to address misbehavior. I'm speaking with University of South Carolina School of Law Professor Derek Black, author of the new book, Ending Zero Tolerance, The Crisis of Absolute School Discipline, and Nicole Joseph, attorney for Disability Rights Maryland, co-chair of the Maryland Coalition to Reform School Discipline. We're taking your calls at 410-662-8780, your emails at midday@wypr.org. We got an email from Camden in Baltimore saying, why are you only looking at comparisons between black and white students? What about other groups such as Latinos or Asian students? I have lived in Texas and California, and I have seen Latino students struggle as well. Derek Black, can you address that?
Yeah, so every demographic group is different, but I think the email is on to something. So what we see is that Latino students are quite often more likely to be suspended and expelled than white students, but not at the levels of African American students, at least not nationally. Asian American students are actually the least likely to be suspended or expelled. And so that's sort of where the demographic groups break down. But there are certainly there are certainly issues for the Latino community as well. I have not seen any particular clusters where I would sort of find high levels of Asian American students being suspended or expelled.
Let's talk to Penny, who's calling us from Baltimore County. Penny, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
And I understand you are a former principal?
I'm a retired high school principal, and as such has certainly had my opportunity to suspend and also take students to expulsion hearings. And I just want to commend both your guests because they have given us a very broad view with specificity, and they are absolutely correct. You do have to get to the root of why students are reacting and responding the way they are, because there's always a reason. Students aren't inherently predisposed to break the rules randomly. And so what is the root cause of their behavior, and how do we address those? And one of your guests mentioned the need for mental support, and I absolutely agree and have said that many years ago, as well as emotional support for students. And I will say that I took my time before I suspended or took a student to expulsion, and my barometer is, what would I want someone to do for my son? How far do I want them to go? I needed that to keep me honest. And once you talk to students one-on-one, you often find out that it's just a blessing that they even appear in school. So just the conversation has been awesome. And I think that your guests have done their homework, and they have a really good handle on what we need to do to address it.
Thank you, Penny. I think they're awesome also, but I must say I still am I don't have what it sounds like you have a clearer picture of when it makes sense to suspend and expel and when it doesn't, and I'm not sure that I have picked that up. Nicole, would you like to respond to Penny's points?
Well, I appreciate what she said. There are some situations where students need to be removed from the classroom, and what we have been told by through state regulations is that we should only do that, at least for longer term suspensions and expulsions, when they pose an imminent threat. So I think that's a good standard to keep in mind. Does the student pose a threat to other people? And if they do, then they should be removed. But when students do things that are not threatening to other people, when they aren't hurting other people, and we know that suspension isn't going to change those minor misbehaviors, then those are the situations where we should find alternatives.
And when you talk about a threat, you're talking about a threat to the physical well-being of the others in the classroom. You're not talking about a threat to the atmosphere of the classroom.
That is what you're right.
Derek Black, you heard Penny's praise, and I agree. But is there a bright line for you? Penny said she for herself used, how would I want my kids to be treated?
Yeah, I mean, I think that I would agree with the imminent threat that's an issue. You know, as to the misbehaving, I think the question you asked sort of suggests, well, isn't a misbehaving student sort of a threat to learning? I think that's what you're sort of suggesting. And so the answer is, yes, they are. But that threat to learning is not going to be eliminated over time simply by suspending and expelling that student. And so, you know, it does take front-end work, and that's what a lot of our sort of positive behavioral support programs are about, is you know, doing the front-end work so that we don't confront the situation later where a teacher feels compelled to throw a student out. And so I think when we wait until the classroom is out of control, the teacher seems trapped. They feel that they have no choice. But we've made two or three mistakes along the way when we get to that point.
Larry is calling us from Parkville. Larry, welcome to Midday.
Good evening. Good afternoon to your guests. I got a question to ask. I have a friend of mine. Her daughter was just enrolled in this school. It's predominantly white. This particular incident happened. She was on the bus with her girlfriend, and she was playing the music. Her girlfriend was playing the music loud, and one of the girls was annoyed by the music. So it was a verbal confrontation. So she got up, and in the process of getting up, she bumped up against my friend's daughter's girlfriend. So she went up and hit her, and then the other girls jumped in, and a fight occurred. My friend's girlfriend went up to help her. It was just two blacks on the bus. Well, she called me from work and told me to go and pick her daughter up from school because she was suspended. And I went to the school, and I asked the vice principal, were there anyone else suspended besides the two girls? He said, well, I can't give out that information. So I said, okay. When we went to enroll her, I asked him, was there any supervision on the bus, security? No, just the bus driver. Was there a video camera? Oh, yes, there's a video camera about what happened, but we don't give out that information. And then he questioned her and told her what she should be doing in terms of her behavior and by not getting into a fight. One of the things he suggested to her was, well, what are we going to do when we're on the bus again and somebody hits you? And my friend's daughter responded, well, I'm not going to fight. So I asked the vice principal, I said, well, if the only adult on the bus is the bus driver and someone comes and attack her, she's just supposed to stand there until the bus driver stops the bus and come back and stop. She's not supposed to defend herself. But my question is, what is it in terms of knowledge that the parents are supposed to get from the school system in terms of what happened because the child was suspended and not a whole lot of information was given to us about what happened? According to the vice principal, the reason why she was suspended because they interviewed the other students on the bus.
Larry, I appreciate your posing this for us. Our time is growing short, so let me ask Professor Black to address this.
Yeah, this is a tough situation, but the answer is there's what's called the Federal Education Rights Protection Act and a Privacy Act, I should say. And so schools are not allowed to give out information about other students in their records. And there's a very good reason for that. It could be disability going on. It could be grades. It could be – that's just not anyone else's business. I understand why he's frustrated, but I give you an example as to why they shouldn't be doing it. You know, last year, Eva Moskowitz got into it with a mother whose child had been suspended. I think the child was in second grade or something. And then Eva Moskowitz, who operates charter schools in New York City, began to talk about how this child had been a problem for some long period of time. It is entirely inappropriate for a school to begin to talk to third parties about any other child, right? That's an issue between parents and those children. And it certainly can be frustrating in this situation, but I think that has to be the policy, is that schools don't give out information about other students.
Larry, thank you for the call. Derek Black, we're down to just a minute or two. So let me ask you a big question for a tight answer. One of the things you write in your book is that constitutional protections are the only absolute check on abuses of school discipline. Can you leave us with a thought about why you've reached that conclusion and how what that means for the rest of us?
Yeah, I mean, the Constitution and our laws are necessarily meant to protect the minority from the majority. It's meant to protect the powerless from the democratic process when the democratic process refuses to act rationally. And our courts over the past four decades have simply looked the other way when schools are taking pretty egregious and atrocious actions towards children. And they can't wait. They can't wait for Maryland's legislature to get it right. They can't wait for California to get it right. That these children, as I said with the data earlier, their lives are being thrown away with suspensions and expulsions. And it is the duty of civil rights advocates. It is the duty of courts to stand up for those children when no one else will stand up for them, when the political process will not respond to their needs.
I appreciate that thought. Nicole Joseph, let me ask you to wrap up with what you think the top priority is here in Maryland. What needs to be done right away? What needs to be done perhaps a little bit later?
Well, I think we need to address disproportionality. We know that the disproportionality in Maryland is just like it is nationally, where students with disabilities and African American students specifically are suspended and expelled at a much higher rate, and we need to address that. And I also think that in Baltimore specifically, we have a problem with a lack of due process in suspension. So when a student is suspended for a long period of time, they aren't provided with sufficient due process by Baltimore City Public Schools in order to ensure that there is fairness in the process. So those would be the two things that I think need to happen immediately.
It's been, at least for me, an eye-opening conversation, and I am grateful to you both. University of South Carolina School of Law Professor Derek Black, new book out this week titled Ending Zero Tolerance, The Crisis of Absolute School Discipline, published by NYU Press. Thanks so much for spending the hour with us.
Thank you.
And Nicole Joseph, attorney for Disability Rights Maryland, and she's co-chair of the Maryland Coalition to Reform School Discipline. Thanks so much for being here.
Thank you.
And I also want to thank Eddie's of Roland Park for providing lunch for our guest today. Eddie's is a full-service market with locations on North Charles Street and on Roland Avenue in Roland Park. Their deli features unique sandwiches, salads, specials each day, all listed on their website, eddiesofrolandpark.com. I also want to mention that WIPR's education reporter Jonna McCone is planning a series on school discipline, school police, how school climate affects learning. It's going to start later this year, so keep your ears open for that. I want to thank you for listening. Tune in tomorrow. We'll listen back to my conversation with landscape designer Larry Wiener about why gardening as we know it is outdated and why native landscapes present an easy and environmentally friendly alternative. I'm Sheila Cast. Have a great afternoon.